Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser and Sport Clips. Well, the last time we talked to Andrew Carter, we were getting set for the Notre Dame-North Carolina game that had to be moved.
Wasn't there a flood or something going on?
Yeah.
And, of course, a month later, North Carolina's cutting down the nets, winning a national championship. And now Andrew rejoins us to talk about the North Carolina Tar Heel football team that is off to a 1-4 start this year, but they welcome the Fighting Irish to Chapel Hill coming up on Saturday. Andrew, good to speak with you once again. It's Darren. How are you this evening?
Well, I'm doing great, Darren. Thank you so much for having me.
Greatly appreciate your time, as always. We've heard the storyline, Andrew. 13 North Carolina players lost for the season. I've read 19 guys hurt. Which side of the football has been hurt the most by these injuries?
Well, definitely the offensive side. You know, this was already going to be a challenging set of circumstances, a rebuilding year for this offense after everything that lost last year, losing Mitch Trubisky, losing, the top three receivers that they had. They lost their top three rushers. They lost probably their two best offensive linemen from last year, all to either, you know, leaving school early or just graduating. And so I think they lost something like 90% of their production from last year. And then, like you mentioned, they've had a ton of injuries on that side of the ball. Especially, they've been decimated at wide receiver. They lost their three best receivers from last season, and then they've lost another four. Another guy's going to come out today and be announced as a loss for the season. So they've lost four receivers in five games. So at that position, they've just been decimated. They've had some injury problems up front on the offensive line. And again, offensively, this was always going to be a challenging year, a rebuilding kind of year. And then with the injury situation, they just don't have, you know, nearly what they expected. But defensively, it hasn't been a picnic either. I mean, they lost their starting middle linebacker for the season, Andre Smith, for an injury. One of their best defensive tackles, Jalen Dalton, he's not out for the season, but he hasn't played since week two against Louisville. So on that side of the ball, they've been hurt too.
When you look at all those guys, and I mean, as you just said, it's a pretty long list. Who's maybe the most significant out of that list of players that they're missing right now?
Probably Austin Prohl. He was going to be a guy who was expected to lead this offense, both as an emotional leader, a vocal leader with that position, and then just kind of, you know, produce too. They lost so many playmakers from last year, and he was the only guy returning at a skill position who did really much of anything of consequence last year. They also lost Thomas Jackson, their number two returning receiver from last year. He made some plays. Those two guys were the only guys coming back who made double-digit catches a season ago. But again, Prohl was really expected to be a guy that would provide some emotional leadership, be kind of a vocal guy who could kind of keep things together, and he's gone. So I would say him on offense, and certainly Andre Smith. You know, the middle linebacker position is often referred to as a quarterback of the defense, and he's gone too. I mean, he went down when these guys played against Louisville in week two, an especially bad day for him because he came into that game saying how UNC was really going to contain Lamar Jackson and do a great job against him, and they did not do that. And not only that, but he suffered a season-ending knee injury. So I would say those two guys, they lost basically their two leaders coming into the year on offense and defense.
Andrew, the Irish have only faced one dual-threat quarterback so far this year, a true dual-threat, and that was Brian Lewerke of Michigan State. Chance Surratt fits that particular mold. Two-part question. When you look at Surratt's game, how could he hurt the Irish? And if I could ask a follow-up question, Brandon Harris is an interesting guy, highly acclaimed down at LSU, didn't work out. He's only thrown 42 passes for Carolina. Why has it not worked in Chapel Hill as well?
Well, I'll answer the first one of those, the first part of that question first. I mean, Surratt, you know, he is kind of a dual threat guy. I think that's a fair description, but I think he's much more of a threat, you know, kind of running the ball and his mobility at this point than he is as a passer. I think the offense has been really limited in terms of his limitations with throwing the deep ball. He doesn't really have a great arm at this point. He's just kind of limited in what he can do going down the field. UNC has really kept the playbook very basic and simple. they haven't taken a whole lot of chances. I think even if he was equipped to make those kind of throws down the field, you know, the kind that Mitch Trubisky really excelled at making last year, the ones that Marquise Williams the past couple of years before that did so well, you know, you wouldn't have anyone to throw the ball to anyway. So even if that was a big part of Chaz's arsenal, it's like, who does he have to throw the ball to? So, yeah, UNC is using a lot of shorter passing routes, a lot of, you know, screens, a lot of passes in the flat. It's more of a kind of east-west passing game than it is a vertical passing game at this point. So kind of one of his dual threats has been really limited just based on the circumstances. And as for Brandon Harris, you know, he did start the season. He played the first game against Cal, didn't play especially well. He came in week two against Louisville. He actually played really well the second half of that game. But that was a game that Chaz Surratt actually started that game and then suffered a minor injury right before halftime and didn't play the second half. And Brandon played well, to his credit. Didn't throw any interceptions. He made good decisions. He looked really comfortable. And then since then, he hasn't really gotten a whole lot of chances to play. And last week, when UNC was struggling down at Georgia Tech in the game that UNC lost 33-7, you know, they did put in Brandon Harris for a play, or for a series rather, and his first drop back pass, he throws an interception. That's just the kind of thing that infuriates the coaches, obviously. I would be surprised if we saw him much at all the rest of the way, barring any kind of injury situation. I think at this point, you know, UNC understands that it's not going to win the Coastal Division this year in the ACC. It's not going to compete for a conference championship. It's not going to an upper-level bowl game. And I think at this point it makes a lot of sense for them to kind of, you know, build for the future. And obviously Harris has the rest of the season in terms of his eligibility, and Chaz Surratt has three more years after this year. So clearly he's the future, and I think, you know, they're looking at it that way. Just, you know, what makes sense to kind of build for the future, and, you know, certainly Chaz starting the rest of the way and gaining experience, I think, makes the most sense.
Listen to what you're saying there, Andrew. I mean, is this an offense that really has an identity right now, or are they just sort of piecemeal, grab-bagging, trying to figure out what works just because of all these issues they have?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they have an identity just in that, you know, their scheme is well-established and what they want to do is so well-established. And, you know, Larry Fedora, the head coach, this is his sixth season, and he's well-known for his offensive scheme. It's an up-tempo, no-huddle spread. They've been doing the same thing for the past six seasons. So, they have an identity. They just can't really achieve it. I mean, you know, they don't have the bodies. They don't have the guys. You know, again, up front, the offensive line's been banged up. We've been through the receiver situation. And then they're starting a quarterback right now who has started four college games. You know, a guy who's still very much learning how to be a starter at this level. You know, and so they have an identity, but whether they can really achieve it is a question. And to this point, they just, you know, they really haven't.
Andrew Carter is our guest, beat reporter for the Tar Heels, for the News and Observer. And I have a feeling you probably partially answered my next question in your last comments. But for the five games, Andrew, the Tar Heels have led in the fourth quarter. Is there a common theme to the team's poor finishes to games?
You know, basically, I feel like UNC has just kind of run out of gas in these fourth quarters, especially last week at Georgia Tech. Really, the third quarter last week was the quarter of doom for UNC. And they've had a quarter of doom in each one of their losses. Now it's the fourth quarter against Cal and Louisville and Duke. And last week it was the third quarter, like I said. Really, UNC has had problems on third down on both sides. On offense, it's not really doing a great job of converting third downs. And on defense, they've been one of the worst teams in the country at stopping other teams on third down. So when a defense doesn't get off the field on third down, obviously they're on the field longer. The offense, you know, the other team's offense is, racking up the time of possession. And I think UNC is, you know, they've had really a fatigue problem late in games, defensively especially. They've just had an inability to stop other teams. I think they've worn down. Again, you saw that last week against Georgia Tech, another team that really likes to run the ball. UNC was just kind of exhausted by the end of that game. So I think that's kind of been the constant theme, that UNC has played well enough to stay in games for two quarters, two and a half, three quarters, and then by the end of it, it just really wears down.
You might have just answered this, but obviously Georgia Tech runs a different kind of running attack with its option and all. But if Notre Dame lines up and just plays smash mouth with the big bodies that they have up front, does Carolina have what it takes to try to withstand that?
I think they can hang in there for a while. I think they could do a decent job for a half or for three quarters maybe. But the question is whether if it's a game on Saturday, if it's competitive, if the score is close in the fourth quarter, can UNC actually muster up enough energy and enough execution to really kind of stick in there and stay in the game? They haven't done that to this point in any game. I mean, literally every game that they've played, even against ODU, Old Dominion, which was kind of out of hand. UNC won that game going away. But still, even in that game, ODU was at its best in the fourth quarter, albeit against some of UNC's reserves. So if that trend changes on Saturday, it's literally going to be the first time this season that UNC will have put together a strong second half and a strong fourth quarter. We just haven't seen that at all. Actually, UNC played pretty well against that triple option last week, with the exception of 260-plus yard rushing plays that they gave up. Georgia Tech ran for 403 yards, I think was the total, which, that's not necessarily surprising against an offense that just runs the ball the entire game. But UNC actually kept it in check, but they gave up about 130 yards on two plays. And that's been the other reason why this defense has really struggled, is its inability to stop the other team's big play. I think UNC already, through five games this year, it's almost given up as many 40-yard plays as it gave up all of last year. It's been one of the worst defenses in the country in terms of limiting the big play. So those have really killed UNC too. Those two or three times a game where there's a complete breakdown, they've really been exploited there as well.
Andrew, you're on a radio show in the heart of Chicago Bears country, so I got to ask you about Mitchell Trubisky. You saw him play down in Chapel Hill, starting quarterback for the Chicago Bears Monday night against the Minnesota Vikings. Do you have the expectation in time that this could be an above-average quarterback in the National Football League? And I hate to say franchise quarterback because there are just so few of those in the National Football League.
Right, yeah. I mean, I think stuff like that is kind of really difficult to project. But, I definitely feel like he has all the tools, as I say. I mean, he has everything that you would want in one of those kind of guys. I mean, he does everything you want on the field. He's very accurate. He has a strong arm. He's pretty mobile. He's smart. He can read a defense. He's good at kind of shifting his eyes around and keeping defenders guessing in terms of where he's going to go with the ball. So he has all the natural physical tools, I think, that anybody would want in an NFL quarterback. I think the question for me is just how quickly he can find success. I mean, what's his learning curve going to be? He only started 13 games in college. That's been something that a lot of people have been harping about and wondering why that's the case. UNC expected to have him another year. No one really expected when he started last season that he was going to have such a high level of success so quickly and be able to leave after just one season as a starter. So that kind of caught people off guard. But I think in time he has everything that a quarterback needs to be successful. I think the scouts really fell in love with his mechanics, with all the measurables and all that kind of thing. And clearly when you watch his film, when you study him, you see why people thought so highly of him. But again, I think it's only natural that there's going to be some kind of a learning curve. After only starting 13 college games, I wouldn't expect him to come in and light the world on fire in the NFL. But I think he has everything there, again, to be successful.
Andrew, real quick, it looked like this long-awaited NCAA academic case was finally going to be, we were going to finally get some resolution to it, but it sounds like that's not going to happen. Can you kind of update exactly what is going on with that right now?
Yeah, so, I reported earlier this morning about 9:30 or so that, the announcement was supposed to come out tomorrow. And, I stand by that. There were some emails sent out from the NCAA to various parties involved in this case that basically said just that, said that the report was going to be released tomorrow at noon. There was going to be a media teleconference following that at 1 o'clock. And basically, as I understand it from talking with some folks today, UNC basically asked the NCAA to kind of hold off. UNC tomorrow is going to announce a huge campus-wide fundraising initiative, a $4.3 billion fundraising campaign. A lot of top donors are in town in Chapel Hill right now. There's a lot of important people, a lot of upper echelon alums. They have events scheduled all throughout the weekend. I imagine that the university's leadership was going to be tied up with other activities tomorrow related to this fundraising kickoff. And so it sounds like both parties kind of agreed to hold off on this for a little bit. I mean, I don't know when it's going to come out now. I would guess maybe Monday or Tuesday, certainly next week sometime, I think, is when it's going to come out. But it definitely was set to be released tomorrow before UNC kind of asked this thing to be postponed.
Brother. Well, it's been a long time coming. What's a couple of more days, yeah. I guess? Well, Andrew, I tell you what, I guess we'll see you in South Bend January 13th when the defending national champions come back to Purcell Pavilion to take on Bonzi Colson and the Irish.
That'd be a fun game. I look forward to it.
Yeah, we look forward to meeting you. We've had you on the program a couple of times, and we'll be sure to say hello and hope you have an enjoyable game to write about down in Chapel Hill on Saturday. The Irish and the Tar Heels at 3:30. And as always, greatly appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you very, very soon.
Always happy to come on. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Thank you so much. Andrew Carter does a great job covering the Tar Heels down in the North Carolina area, of course, for the News and Observer, the Irish and the Tar Heels. That'll be fun in basketball. January 13th.
Oh,
Old Purcell will be rocking.
No kidding.
When the Heels come to town. Always appreciate Andrew's time. It is North Carolina and Notre Dame Saturday. Kickoff at 3:30 here on WSBT Radio. Pre-game coverage starts at 9. I'll be joined, of course, by Sean and Eric for Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat. We're on the air from noon until 2:30 on Saturday to break it all down and say if, and, buts a whole bunch more. And again, if you're just joining us, Brandon Wimbush, game time decision. He is still listed as day-to-day, but practice today. How much, we don't know. Brian Kelly didn't tell us that. He just practiced. Who knows what that means? To be continued. It is 14 minutes in front of the top of the hour at WSBT.